All right. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome back to CSO2. As we do every week, there'll be a lab tomorrow focused on signals. And then the next homework is not due this Friday, but next Friday. And as we talked about sort of at the beginning of class, our normal flow is we will discuss something in lecture, then we'll likely have a lab on that topic, and then that will probably feed into the homework. And so you can see that here. We talked about signals in class, signals lab on Wednesday, and then that will be sort of useful, and we'll reuse some of the code for the timing homework. Of course, I didn't mention, but like every week, there will be a quiz on Thursday. Any questions? Anything before we get started? All right, cool. So we're talking about processes. Last time we sort of covered how we create processes, where they come from. Today we're going to continue with that and look at how processes, parent and child processes, interact. Okay, so last time we were talking about fork. Oh, not that fork. So that has too many tines, so it's probably more like this, right? The fork system call, which is a copies the current process. And as we mentioned, this is definitely a confusing system call because we sort of write it like a function call, but unlike a normal function call, it actually returns twice, right? Once in the parent process and then once in this newly created child process. We differentiate those based on the return code, and we'll see a bunch of, we saw examples of that, and we'll see more examples of that today. And what's important to keep in mind about fork is that it copies everything. It's an entire duplication of the state of the process when fork is called. Well, except the PID, right? We have different processes, they have different process IDs. But otherwise, everything is a duplicate. And as we saw last time, we typically will have a common paradigm like this. So we start with our parent process here. And that might execute for a while until it calls fork. And as we know, fork is how we can create a child process. And that is a new separate process. Now, often, what the parent really wants to do is it wants to allow the child process to execute, and it really just wants to sort of wait until at some point when the child process has finished. And so our first question is, well, how do we do that? How do we let the parent process wait until finally the child process is done doing whatever it's supposed to be doing and has finished, and then we can continue from there? So that's one question we're going to talk about today. The second aspect of this that we need to consider is, what can the child process do before it calls exec? So if you recall, exec is the method by which we can start running a new program. But there's sort of this period before we actually call that system call in the child process where we might want to configure the setup before that new process runs, or sorry, that new program runs. And so we'll talk a bit about what the mechanisms are that we can to do this. Okay. And so to do this, we're building up this library of process APIs, right? We've seen a majority of these, and we just started on wait last time, and we'll go in more depth today. And this isn't meant to be sort of the exhaustive list, but this is sort of the common interface that we use when we're creating new processes and interacting with them. So specifically, we want to talk about wait, or wait PID. And this is going to allow us to implement that sort of canonical or typical control flow where we want the child process to do something and then we just want to wait until that process is finished. All right, so here's the function, sort of the signature for the wait PID system call. And in a lot of ways, this is a sort of an intuitive system call. So we're basically waiting on a PID, and the first argument is the process ID to wait on. And what the operating system is going to do for us is, after we call this, it will wait for the specified process ID to finish, that process to finish, and then wait PID will return. And so it kind of gives us exactly that mechanism we want. Now, there's a couple other arguments here. So we have a pointer to status. And this is a way that we can retrieve some information about, well, why did that process finish? Like, what happened to it? So if we need to know that, or we want to take some action based on what happened, we pass in a pointer to an integer in the status, and then the operating system will set that when the process has finished. And then third argument is options. Now, it's okay to just set 0 as the options, basically. We don't want any specific configuration. However, if you want to see the actual what's accepted, you can look at the man page for wait PID, and that will list the sort of, there's like 3 options that you can use when calling this system call. I think for a lot of use cases, we don't need those, and so our examples will just pass 0 there, but that is available in this call as well. And then finally, there's this special version where if we call it with -1 for the process ID, that's wait for any process, any child process to finish. I should also mention that this is important, right? It's wait for a child process, not just any process, but a child process. All right, so this is the system call we can use. Let's look at an example. So this code, we're going to see sort of a lot of snippets that are very similar to this. And the reason is because when we use fork, as we are here, we have a pretty typical program structure. So typically, the next thing we want is we're going to have some if statement, and we're going to check. Is the return from fork, this child PID, greater than 0? If so, that's the system call telling us what the process ID of the new child process is. And that must mean we're in the parent process. So remember, fork returns twice. And so if in one execution, one of those returns, child PID is greater than 0, that means that we are in the parent process. And if it returns 0 here, that means we are in the child process. So we're typically going to see that if statement after fork, because we really do need to separate those two cases. Right. Now, what's this example doing? Well, we're basically, in the parent process, we're pretty much just calling wait. We pass in the child PID. We give it a reference to our integer here. And we don't use any options. And that's just telling the operating system, I just want to wait till this process is finished. And when that happens, wait PID will return. Okay so far? Any questions? Yeah.
Are there situations where it might switch between the child and the parent process? Like, say that the child process, say that like the child process, like child PID turned out to be greater than 0, then you go through the parent process, but then somehow like switches to the child process.
So I think the question is this sort of control flow here we have. We have this if statement, if child PID is greater than 0, else if child PID is 0, and that's how we're differentiating the parent and child. Like, is that sort of always going to work, or is that just kind of the convention? And the answer is that will always work. This is sort of guaranteed by the fork system call that child PID will always be greater than zero in the case, in the sort of process that's still the parent. And in the child process, it will always be zero. And what we're not showing here is that fork could fail. And so there is a chance that the fork didn't succeed, and there'd be another case for that. But this structure will always work. Yeah. Okay, so we can only wait for a child process. And then the question is sort of like, well, what's the ID of the child process? Well, that's returned by fork. And the child, it's returned by fork to the parent process. The child process ID will not be zero. This is just a convention here, so that we can differentiate which process we're in. If the child process, so basically inside of this if statement here, we could call get PID and get the ID of that running process, it would not be zero. In the parent process, however, child PID is set to the actual PID of the child, and that's what we're gonna pass into wait, and that will not be zero. All right. Okay, so the next thing we have to discuss a little bit about is what is this status doing here? And so how is that being set? Well, again, this is a way for the parent process to learn a little bit about what happened. Part of what this status is going to be set to is actually comes from the program itself. So this is a very simple program. It's just a main function that returns zero. We could have also written this with exit zero, but this sort of number here gets passed along to that status variable. And so this is a way for the program that we're running to share a little bit of information, right? Not a ton, it's just sort of like one number, but a little bit of information about kind of what happened. And so maybe, so oftentimes, if everything is just normal, we'll return zero, and then we return some other number to mean a certain error happened. It's a common convention. However, this value, so this sort of status, exit status here from either exit or return, that's only going to exist if that program sort of exited normally. Right? Because if we never actually get to return zero or we never actually call exit zero, then we won't have that value. Well, wait a minute. You might be thinking, if we don't get to return, we don't return from main or we don't call exit, why would the process stop? Does anyone remember another thing that could happen? Yeah. If the process call, the program called a system call, which it's likely going to, but that doesn't necessarily, that likely won't end the process. Yeah?
Any number of things could send a signal for a process.
Okay, so one thing we've talked about are signals, right? An unhandled signal is another way a process could exit. And so in that case, we wouldn't have this return, but we can check for that. So here, again, this is sort of zoomed in a little bit. Similar code. We have our wait here. But now after wait returns, we're actually going to inspect this status variable. And so you can see our if statement here. And so these, this WIFE or WIF exited, this is a macro. And it basically just helps us parse what's going on here. So this is basically going to check and sort of return a Boolean if this status indicates that that process returned or exited normally, right? So this is, again, it returned from main or called exit. If that was the case, if that's how the process finished, then we'll be in here, in this part of the if statement. We can print that, and then we can also retrieve that number, right? So we can actually get the status and print that as well. And so this would be like if we had that number here. So from our return, sorry, not the best handwriting here. Like if we return 7, right? That 7 would be retrieved by this. There's other cases as well. So we talked about another way a process might end or terminate is because there was a signal sent, either it wasn't handled or it was a signal it couldn't handle. If that was the case, then this will return true and we'll print this. And so these W macros are sort of just helpers to make it easier to decode this data structure so we don't have to do it manually. But really, we're just checking, okay, what happened? Look good? All right. So just highlighting the macros there. All right, so we're back to sort of our typical diagram here. Right? Our parent is called fork. We get the child. Now, the parent basically just wants to wait until that child process is finished, and so it's just going to call wait. That's going to tell the operating system, I don't need to run until that particular child process has finished. And so when that happens, the child process executes. Eventually, it exits for some reason, or calls exit, then our parent process can pick back up. Now this structure, we don't know normally, I guess sort of like when we're using like Portal, we're not necessarily thinking about this picture, but we've actually been doing basically this flow every time we've been using the command line. Right, the parent process is the shell that we're interacting with. And what's it doing? It's basically waiting for us to type in a command. And then when we do that, it calls fork to create a new child process. It then takes the command we asked it to run, uses that for exec to start running that program. And then the shell doesn't really have anything to do, right? It's just waiting for whatever command we asked it to run to finish. So it just calls wait. And when that command that's running finally finishes, because either, again, it returned or we hit Control C, then we get back to the shell, right? And this just sits there. It basically happens in a loop, waits for another command. So we've been interacting with this control flow all the time, but now we can see under the hood of exactly how do we implement this. Just to sort of make another note here is that we can have a slight variation on this, right? It's okay if the parent has other work to do. So it may have other tasks or operations or calculations or what have you that it wants to run here, kind of depicted by the thread execution, while the child process is off doing its own thing. That's okay too. And then maybe at some point it's like, okay, I've gotten to a point where now I want to wait for this child process. And it's possible that the child process actually exited first. That's okay. The wait will still work, and it'll just see, basically, it's just going to return right away because that child process is already finished. And so there's really nothing to wait on. It's just a check at that point. Did this child process finish? So this is also a valid sort of execution flow here if the parent has more work that it wants to do. Questions? Okay, so yeah, what happens if the picture as kind of shown is what actually happens and the child process does finish before the parent process calls wait? And the operating system will sort of keep track of that state. And so until something checks to see, hey, did this process ever actually finish? The operating system will hold on to that so that it can return the correct answer. So it's okay if we end up calling wait after the process exited, we'll get the same expected behavior. Yeah?
So if something never checks the status, is it just going to permanently stay there until the parent process ends? Or how does that work?
If nothing ever checks, I actually don't know. So in one case, the child process didn't end. So let's say it never called exit. And the child process just keeps running. And then the parent process ends. The OS will assign the child process a new parent. Basically, it'll just sort of fall back to like root or something. And so the child process, if it's still executing, will still have a parent. It'll be a different parent. Charles, do you know what happens if the child process does exit, nothing checks wait, the parent process goes away? Does that also still get sort of a new parent that could check wait?
Yeah.
Okay. So that will happen regardless of what happens to the parent. The operating system will store that state until something checks it. Any other questions? All right. We can also have a sort of different representation here. So we sort of start on the left, right, with our program, where we call fork. Again, we're going to keep seeing this, right? We have our same if statements here. Now we're going to have two directions that we go. So first question, this arrow here, as we go sort of up, which process is that depicting? Up here. Yeah. Right, this is the child. Right, because PID was 0, that indicates we're in the child process. And so what does that mean? This must indicate here. Parent, yes, okay, right, because we have two processes now, child and parent. And so here now we're executing wait in the parent and exec in the child, and this exec call is going to change the program we're running to be this new program, whatever we asked for. Excuse me. Make sense so far? All right. Okay, so we have sort of our, again, growing API library here. We've talked about getPID, we've talked about fork. We can then run a new program with exec. We just talked about wait, allowing a parent process to wait for a child process. Now, it's also possible that the child process doesn't finish, right? It could sit in an infinite loop, for example. It could be designed to sort of just continually run and never really have a case where it exits. And that's why we talked about signaling before, so the parent process can handle that case as well. It could choose to only allow the child process to run up to a certain amount of time, and if it exceeds that, send a kill signal to stop and terminate that child process. All right. Any questions? Any other lingering things? Yeah.
So say you call wait PID on some child process that's running and it goes to the end of the loop like we talked about. Is
Yeah, okay, so it might be helpful if I go back to, actually, we'll just go back to this simple, I think, this case here. So in our wait PID example, so here we're calling wait PID, which is going to wait for the child process. Well, what if that child process sort of never finishes? Then wait PID won't return. And so we're going to need something to help us out of that. And so it could be a signal. We could have a signal from the operating system, like control C. There's one of the options we can pass to wait PID here, instead of zero, is actually a version that doesn't block. So wait PID will return immediately, regardless of whether the process has or has not returned, or sorry, finished. And so it's a way to sort of just check, like, has this happened yet? Yes or no? So that the parent process can sort of make a decision about what's happening. So that is a trickier case to handle if your child process never actually finishes. Right. Okay. So let's look at this in sort of an example and see if we can reason through what will happen with waits and forks and exec. So let's take 3 minutes, talk to your neighbors, given this program, and assuming that fork and exec return succeed. Like we're not looking for fork and exec failures. What are the possible outputs? Who would like some more time? Let's take another minute. All right, any takers for A? Okay, how about B? Okay, how about C? D? E? And F, all of the above. Okay, all right, so definitely quite a few for E, a few for A, a few for B. Maybe one or two for the others. So let's look at, let's walk through this, see what sort of what we expect to happen here. I think the first thing we might notice, right, is this for loop. And so this for loop is going to iterate twice, and within there we're calling fork. Right, and so that's really the critical, one of the critical operations in this program. And so we're going to start with a single process, our sort of our what's going to be our parent process, executing this. It's going to enter this loop. On the first iteration, it's going to call fork and save it the output to the first entry in this PIDs array. But remember, that happens, that sort of returns twice, right? So that's essentially going to happen twice. Once in the parent process, and then once in this newly created child process. And so here's our if statement, right, that we keep seeing. And we're checking, okay, is the return from fork zero or not? Okay, so if it's zero, that indicates that we are in the child process. And so the child process is going to set up the arguments and then call exec with echo, and it's going to then echo one of these two arguments, L1 or L2, based on whatever I is. So the first time around, I, because remember, the child process is a direct copy, so I was zero in the parent process, and it's going to be zero in the child process. And so we'll have one child process which is calling a new program called echo and echoing L1. All right, I think hopefully sounded like everyone, like that kind of makes sense so far, which is good. Now, this if statement is also going to execute in the parent process. Now, the parent process, PID 1, is not going to be 0. It's going to be the actual ID of the child. And so this if statement won't happen. We will loop back and do the second iteration of this loop. Now I will be one. We do the exact same thing. We're going to call fork again. We're going to save the return value from fork in the next index of the array, which is going to happen twice, once in that original parent process and once in a new child process. And the child process is going to do the same thing. It's going to exec echo, but this time with the second index of our args array, our extra array, I should say, which is L2. So to sort of recap, so where we're at, we've got the parent process is still running. We've now created two child processes. One is executing echo with L1, and one is executing echo with L2. Okay. All right. Yes? Is there a reason for this, sort of how we're incrementing I? No, it's going to be the same. Okay, so we've got,
when echoing the args array, is there a reason it's only echoing the index one?
It's only...
why is it only printing the index of L1 and L2?
I think the question is sort of like, why is echo just printing L1? So echo is the name of the program, and the program, just whatever command line arguments you give it, it just prints those to standard out. So in this case, we're just giving it the first argument of L1 or L2, depending on which child process we're in. It's just going to echo L1 or L2. So we're just setting the second item. So this is just the name of the command, and then this is the actual first argument. We're just replacing arg with L1 or L2. Right? That's what args 1 here is doing.
But are you not passing the whole array?
Yes, and then we're passing all of that. The first argument to argv is going to be the name of the program, and then it's going to echo what's after that. Okay, so we've got our three processes, and so we're going to expect that one of the child processes is going to print L1, one's going to print L2, and now I think we come to sort of a decision point, which is what happens in the first child process. So this is the one where I was 0. What happens after this exec call? Does it return sort of after the exec call, and then will it execute another iteration of this loop? Because remember, the I was 0, and so this loop would then sort of execute again. And the answer is no. Because exec is not sort of it does not return. Exec is saying, I want to take this process, I'm done with whatever program it's running now, and I want to run this new program within the process, and now I've sort of just entirely switched to that. And so that new program might exit, and that's going to exit the process. There's no sort of notion that we could ever like return after exec. That won't happen. I find it helpful to sort of think of exec like an unconditional jump in assembly. We're just jumping to a new location. We're not setting a link register. There's no way back. Right, and so the same kind of thing is happening here. Once we exec, we're running a new program. We're no longer running this program. We no longer have this state. There's no loop to continue. Okay, and so what's going to happen is we're going to have the child process print, one child process print L1, one child process print L2, and then those two child processes will finish. And now we get to our second for loop here, where we're calling wait on each of the child process IDs. Now, this is only going to happen in the parent because the two child processes are now running echo, and they are just going to exit when they're done echoing. And then the parent will finish when both of the child processes have finished. Okay. And so essentially what that means is that we're not going to get B, because we're not, there's no way for that loop to sort of run the second iteration twice. However, we still have sort of A or C. And the key is that when fork creates these two processes, there's no guarantee, creates a new process and we still have the parent process, there's no guarantee which one the OS is going to run. The OS may choose to continue running the parent process, and so it would actually create the two child processes and then go to wait. It may choose to run the first child process and then return to the parent process, which then creates the second child process. It may create both processes, both child processes, and then run the second one first. And so either of these either A or C can happen in either order. And so we get A and C. So just like we've seen before, we have multiple processes. The OS can schedule those as it sees fit. We can't assume any particular ordering. Yep. Okay. So in the second for loop here, where we're waiting, we are waiting for those in a particular order, right? We're going to wait for the PID at index 0 first. And so if the second child process, the one printing L2, finished first, that's okay. The operating system will sort of keep track of that. Eventually, the first child process should run. That will finish, then our first wait will return. When we then call the second wait, because the child process is already exited, it'll return, and so it'll work either way. Yeah. So what does it mean for this child process to finish? And so it's not just the exec call has happened, because that the exec call is happening within that process. That's causing a new program to start executing. But that process is still there, has the same process ID. So that process only finishes when sort of that new program finishes. So that new program might call exit. Echo is pretty straightforward. It's going to return after it echoes. Or it could be interrupted by a signal that's not handled. But something is going to cause that process to finish, just like any other process, whether we sort of started it in this way or not. Yeah. Okay. So how is it that L2... could happen first. So one way we can sort of look at this is we have our parent process that's executing. In one iteration of the loop, it creates the first child process, and in the second iteration of the loop, actually I'll draw it a little bit further down, we create a second child process. Now, those are sort of separate processes as far as the operating system is concerned. The operating system can choose to schedule and run each of those how it sees fit. And so it's entirely possible that the operating system chose to let this parent process run. It forked, created the first child process. The operating system continued to run the parent. It forked, created the second child process. Then the parent process, you continue to allow the parent process to run, it calls wait. Okay, well now the parent process isn't running anymore, it's waiting. And so it's going to run some other process, and it says, oh, I think I'll run this one, right? What we're calling the second child process. And so it prints L2, right? And so just there's sort of the order in which they were created, but from the operating system point of view, they're just separate processes that could schedule in any order. Yeah. So I think the question is, like, this is kind of frustrating because it feels like there's a lot outside of our control. Like, we have this nice for loop. It goes in a certain order. That sort of, we can think about that. But then what actually runs could be very different. Is there some way we can sort of impose some structure? And the answer is yes. So we have wait, right? And so in this example, we're choosing to call it down here. But we could call it sort of earlier in the program. So we could create one child process and then call wait. Now, the parent is nothing to do. It's just waiting. The operating system can run the other the one child process that exists. That can happen first. Then wait will return, and the parent can then call fork again and run a new child process and call wait there. And so we can use wait to sort of basically only give the operating system work to do that we want to do in a certain order. But as far as like being able to sort of fork a bunch of processes and then tell the operating system, hey, I need you to run it in this order, no. At least not in a conventional OS. All right, okay, so with this sort of as a warm-up, let's look at another sort of similar program. What are the possible outputs here? Let's take another sort of 3 minutes. All right. Takers for A. A is an output. How about B? C? D? What about E? Okay, a lot for E. F? G? Okay, and H. All right. So definitely majority for E. All right, let's see if we can confirm that. So this looks similar to our previous example, right? We have a for loop here where our parent is forking twice. And in each of those child processes, we are execing echo, except this case, this time we're sort of just always giving it zero to print. Okay, so that's more or less the same. And really what we're trying to understand here is what are the possible orderings? So after the parent completes the two forks and creates the two child processes. Now remember, right, exec doesn't return. So the child processes are now running these new programs, they're not running this program, and so they're not going to continue in any of this with this program here. So only the parent is going to get to this point where it prints one. And so what can happen here? Well, we've got our parent executing, and then that created our one child and created a second child. And those are sort of now three separate processes. And the operating system can schedule those, again, in sort of different orders. And so it may choose to run the parent process sort of continue all the way through until it hits the wait, at which point this print one will happen first. Or it may choose to run one of the child processes, which was just created, first. And so we'll get a zero. And then it might run the parent, which creates another child process, which it then chooses to run, which would print another zero. And then only then would it then go back to the parent process, and we see this printf1 here. And so we can end up with sort of any of these three orders, just depending on how these processes are scheduled. Okay, and so then the last question is there a case where, you know, this could happen? And we only print two here. So this is, again, only in the parent process, because we only get to this point in the parent process. But the parent is called wait. And it's called wait twice on each one of the child PIDs. And so this will ensure that we only finish this for loop and we only get to here once the once all of the child processes have finished. And so we must get both zeros before we can print this two. And so we do, in fact, get A, B, and C as our options. Yeah. Sure. So what's nice is that the exercise one, exercise two have sort of the same structure for how they're creating the processes. Basically, this for loop is running. It's running, it's going to start as just, there's only one process, the parent, and so that's going to, the parent's going to run this the first time. It calls fork. Now we have two processes at that point. Both are going to check the inside if statement here. But that's only going to be true for the child. So the parent's just going to go past that if statement, go back to the for loop, and call fork again, which is how we get the second child process. Both child processes are going to have that for loop, that if statement be true. They're going to call exec, and now they're just running some other program. And so in both cases, we're going to end up with two child processes by doing this. Any other questions? Yeah.
Would that
So what happens if instead of calling exec, so basically if we, if we didn't do this, but we called printf, would the output be different? And the answer is yes, it would definitely be different. Because if we don't call exec, and we just do something like printf, well, printf does return, right? And so the child process will get to sort of the end of this if statement, and then it will enter the for loop. And so then it's going to call fork and create its own child process. Yes, we will definitely get a different output if we don't have that sort of like one-way function, like exec do not return operation. Yeah. Any other questions on this right now? All right, so now we have a couple examples of how we can do sort of this fork, exec, wait sort of structure. And like I mentioned, this is essentially what a shell is doing, right? In addition to some other sort of features we'll talk about, but when we type in a command, it executes, sort of creates a child process and then can execute that command. Now, some other nice things the shell will do is, so we don't have to type in sort of the full path, we can just use the command name, and the shell will go and figure out where that actually is, assuming we've told it where it should look. So that's kind of a nice convenience feature for us. We don't type out the full path every time. Another feature that we can do is called running in the background, and this is, we're gonna start the program in the same way we always would. We're just going to also then add the ampersand. And this says run in the background, or essentially this is sort of the easier case. This is fork, run that new program as with exec, and then let it go. Right? Don't do the thing where we wait for it, just let it sort of execute in the background and return back to sort of the normal shell operation of waiting for another command. So in some sense, even though we have to sort of tell the shell to do this, this is actually sort of the easier operation to implement. Other shell features include redirection. And so we have a couple examples here where instead of writing to the terminal, we can redirect the output to a file. So this will essentially take whatever would just get printed to the terminal and put it in output.txt, or we can go the other direction. Instead of typing into the terminal and having that be sent, we'll just send the contents of input. And finally, another feature of the shell is the ability to construct pipelines. And so we can run one program and pipe the output of that program into another program, and so we can chain these operations together, right? Where the output of one becomes the input to the next. And so you may have done a variety of these. You've probably certainly done the redirection, right, in the past. And so you've used the mechanism, but now we can actually look at, well, how do we actually implement that? Like, what is the shell doing to facilitate what we're asking so that these programs actually run the way that we expect given how we invoke them on the shell. To understand this, we have to look a little bit at file descriptors. And so this is going to be one of the key abstractions we use to implement these different shell features. Now, we've interacted with file descriptors, of course, in the past, but what they really are is they're referencing state that's being held by the kernel. So the kernel is going to have a struct somewhere in its memory that holds information about the process. And we've sort of alluded and talked about this in a couple different cases when we're thinking of context switches and storing state on behalf of a process. This is sort of the same structure that can store things like the register contents. Will also store a table or array of file descriptions. then the file descriptor is basically an index into that array. And so this sort of represents all open files. And there's sort of the saying of, in Unix, everything is a file. Turns out to be a convenient abstraction for doing a lot of things. And so this could be sort of output to the terminal, a networking socket, what we think of a regular file in a file system, or that pipe example we sort of mentioned. The kernel is keeping track of that for our process, and then we interact with that typically through these file descriptors, which basically saying where do we want to index into that array? So which open file are we referring to? Well, we're actually calling it based on the index. And so this is the same argument that we're passing in to system calls. Right, we have that file descriptor. So where do these come from? Right, where do file descriptors come from? Well, you know, we've definitely done this, right? So like open. If we open a file, well, what we get back is a file descriptor. And so it's just that integer, that index. And then we can use that when we're calling system calls, interacting with the kernel as a way to sort of represent that same open file. And so we can have multiple of those. It's no problem. There's other system calls and operations that use file descriptors. So if we want to have shared memory between two processes, file descriptor. A networking socket, file descriptor. Another type of terminal, file descriptor. Pipe, which we'll talk about on Thursday, file descriptors. All right, so the same abstractions used for these multiple different use cases. And these are how our program can sort of interact with these sort of input and output resources. Right? If we want to write to a file, well, we use a file descriptor, and then we can write to that file descriptor. There's also special file descriptors. These are sort of, we might be using these without really thinking about that there's actually a file descriptor, but there is. So standard in being 0, standard out 1, standard error 2. And so we call printf, well, under the hood, it's using file descriptor 1. And in some of the examples we've seen in class, we've sort of been more explicit about that. And to avoid sort of having just these numbers in our program, there are sort of defined constants, which can help. So it's like a little bit more clear, like it's not just the number one, that's actually supposed to represent standard out. Now we'll talk about sort of where these numbers sort of come from and how to use them, because we can't just open these, right? Because open returns the file descriptor, we don't tell it which one we want. And so we'll have to handle that, and we'll see how that works. And finally, if we can open a file, we can also close it, right? We can close the file descriptor, we close it with the file descriptor. And this is really just closing that file descriptor itself. So it's basically making that index into that array of file descriptions no longer valid. They're deallocating that. Now, it's entirely possible that there's actually multiple file descriptors which are pointing to the same file description. And so in that case, if we close one file descriptor, that file descriptor is no longer usable, but that doesn't mean that the underlying resource is actually still closed or deallocated, because there might be something else that refers to the same thing. Now, when the last file descriptor is closed, then all of those resources, the operating system can free those resources. And so in a lot of common programs, if we just call open, we use that file, and then we call close, yeah, we expect that that's going to deallocate those resources, because that's the only instance where that's open. But with fork and exec and other system calls, now we have cases where we are going to get sort of duplicates. Close, so again, standard convention, 0 on success, or -1 meaning an error, such as like we ran out of space. Okay. And so using these file descriptors is how we can implement features like the shell redirection. And so again, this syntax with the sort of open angle bracket here means treat input.txt as standard in Or it's like akin to if I just took the contents of that file and copied it and then pasted it into the terminal when I ran that program. Right, it's going to behave the same way. And crucially, right, my program, whatever this is, doesn't need to know the difference. Right? It can just read from standard in or call fgets, for example. And whether that's us typing or using shell redirection, that program behaves the same way. And the other direction of using output, writing to a file. So here, instead of echoing foo to the terminal, this is like we just took whatever we got on the terminal and pasted it into a new file called output. We can have the shell do that and set that up for us directly. And again, echo doesn't change. Right? It's the same program that's running, whether it thinks it's outputting to the terminal or it's outputting to this file. Familiar? Are there any questions on sort of this redirection? Right, this is a handy feature, right? Okay. Now, at the beginning of class, I was mentioning there's that little setup window between when our new child process starts after fork and before we call exec. And that's the window where the shell can actually implement these features. And so how does this look? So if we remember what fork is doing, fork is creating this full copy of our program state. Right, so the parent process is copied, except for the ID, and that the child process, including the memory, but also including the file descriptors. So if our parent process had access to standard out, well, then our child process will also, because it's got a copy of that descriptor, or description. Okay. And so those end up duplicating, and so the open file description is the same across both of those. And so that's why when we run this, we can do things like echo to standard out, because we get a copy of the file descriptor, which lets us write to standard out. However, if we want to change that, right, if we can change what that file descriptor refers to, now when the new process or the new program uses it, instead of writing to the terminal, it'll do something else. It'll write to a file, for example. And so we can implement that redirection. And so here, going back to sort of this diagram, we call fork. That creates our two processes, right? This one is the parent, and so we're calling wait. But in the child, now between the return from fork and exec, now we can open new files. So if we wanted to say write to a particular file, well, this is our opportunity to do that. We can open that file and use that file and have the sort of the new program, because we're going to call exec here. Oh, sorry. No. Okay, sorry. We call exec here. Aha. Some of you are like, wait a minute. Right. So we call exec here, and now we'll have access to these new files. So just like we have the file descriptors for standard out, those are just modeled as files. After we do the fork, we can open the files for the redirect. We'll talk about on Thursday how we can actually make those files behave as though they're standard out or standard error or standard in. And then after we do that, that's sort of the setup phase, then we call exec. And now our new program runs with this different sort of environment configuration. And the key to this, the last missing piece here, is that exec is running a new program, so we do not keep the memory, right? Because we wouldn't want echo to have the same memory that our example programs would have. So exec is discarding the old memory, but right, it keeps the file descriptors. And so this part is not changed. And so when our new program runs, it will have the same file descriptors that we set up before we called exec. So that's kind of the last missing piece. Right now we can fork, create a new process. We can configure the file descriptors for that process. Then we can call exec, and that new program will run with the setup that we wanted. And so if we want to change where standard in or standard out writes to, we'll be able to do that. Questions? Well, there's one question, which is, okay, but how do we get the file descriptor numbers to line up? That we'll have to talk about on Thursday. All right, see you in a couple days.